You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Everybody at home and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I am your host, Tristan Riddell, and with me as always, as she is every single week and almost for 2 years now, coming up soon, is Charlene Schmidt.
That's right. Oh my gosh. We are hitting that milestone really fast.
And we kind of skipped over the 1 year mark, didn't we?
We really did. Yeah,
we didn't even recognize it whatsoever.
No, we didn't do a darn thing, and we're turning two now, and so I figure from this point forward, all of our podcasts are going to end in tantrums.
or weird birthday cakes that end with everyone going through a vortex where everything's twisted and the captain can't speak, so maybe that's what we could do.
That might be a little more appropriate. Let's do that.
And that's coming up real fast. So our next episode will be our 2 year anniversary. And you guys will have to wait until then to hear our celebration. But for this week, we have a commentary.
Yes, indeed we do. And we love doing these things. They're so much fun.
They are a lot of fun. And we get a lot of feedback, a lot of positive feedback from people saying that they really enjoy them and that they don't even have to watch the episode to enjoy it. And that's we really appreciate you guys saying that because we try to do that because we realize that people listen to this in their cars or at work where they can't always watch it while they're listening to it. So we endeavor to make that end.
Yes, that is indeed the goal. And we want to do just more than, oh, blah, blah, blah. Look at this. Isn't that pretty? I don't know. I always try to throw in a little something extra.
It's kind of like listening to a stand-up comedian and their album and all they're doing is visual jokes.
Actually, you know, I listen to a couple of comedians' podcasts where they do a live show. And so they are interacting with a live audience. But then when it translates to audio, there's obviously something missing because you just can't quite visualize what the person is doing on stage.
Yeah. It's look at that dude's haircut. That's crazy.
Right. You know, yeah, the physical comedy just doesn't translate. So the idea is to tickle your ears as we work our magic.
There you go. That needs to be like a subline for every single show. To the journey where we tickle your ears.
With our magic. Yes.
With our magic. Well, today's episode is a commentary on Season 4, Episode 6, The Raven. And as Netflix describes it, Janeway is trying to gain passage through a region of space owned by a cautious and xenophobic race of aliens. Now, this is, I wouldn't really call that the focus of the episode. This is kind of more of the B-plot, wouldn't you?
Okay, thank you. That is exactly what my thought was. This is a 7 of 9 story. Granted, this is an element of the story, but I consider this the B-plot.
Yeah. Oh, the hardcore B-plot. So, for those of you who don't remember, this is the episode where we get a little bit more 7 of 9 backstory and where she finds the ship that she was, I don't want to say raised on, but it was kind of her family ship. Like, it was her parents' research ship.
Right. So this is where she was right before the Borg took him.
Right. All right. Well, let's waste no time and just get going. So people at home, you know the drill. When we count down from 3 and hit play, that's when you hit play, whether it's on your DVD, your Netflix, your Hulu, or whatever means that you might have gotten this episode.
Yeah, or maybe several years removed from now, your Blu-ray, we hope.
We hope. And so that you just hit play when we hit play. So have it queued up, have it ready. And here we go. 3, 2, 1, play.
Off we go. Ah, Da Vinci Simulation. What did you think of this?
I always kind of enjoyed the Da Vinci simulation, but I'm glad that we didn't spend forever here. But I feel like they were just on the verge of doing it a little too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I really liked it when they introduced it, and then it kind of tapered off for me just because, oh, guess what? Janeway wants to be an artist and a scientist. The old joke that we've said how many times on TTJ? So, okay, that's cute that she wants to paint and all that, but...
Did you ever do any kind of pottery or any kind of clay work when you were in school?
Oh, like really, really young. We're talking probably 7th grade was the top when I actually did some pottery and maybe some sculpture work. I wasn't very good at it. Did you ever do any?
I did a lot of pottery when I was in middle school, but I never really pursued it because I didn't want to do the whole buy your own wheel thing and have a kiln. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed working with clay, but I don't know why I didn't continue it.
I don't know. I had the option certainly to do it in school, but I just knew I wasn't very good at art in general, which is hilarious because I work as a graphic designer now. So if it's in Photoshop, it's fine.
Yeah.
If it's something that I have to actually draw, stick figures it is.
I love the digital age because of that reason, is that it allows me to be a creative person because I have no talent with my hands when it comes to painting or drawing or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I have zero talent. I would even wager that Janeway has much more talent than I do. And she's even saying in this intro, I'm not even really very good at this.
And that's the beauty of it. And that's one thing that I like that they sometimes introduce that into Star Trek, is that these people have hobbies and they're not always fantastic at it. And yet they do it because it's human and they enjoy it and it relaxes them. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was one thing that appealed with the whole Da Vinci thing, was that, okay, yeah, Kathy is pursuing a little something that maybe she doesn't actually excel at. Because I feel like we get so much of exceptionality. Is that a word? In Starfleet officers? I mean, they're so good at everything because they have to be. Yeah. They're the best of the best.
And that, like, I remember I got into an argument one time with someone about the crew of the Enterprise D, about how they hated it because they're always infallible and they were perfect people. And they didn't find it interesting. And there's just no way in hell that you could find that many people who were that great at the job in one place. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I was like, think about what Wesley had to go through for the Starfleet entrance exam.
Right.
And that was just to get him into Starfleet. And then think about all, like, add years to that of all the seasoned veterans. And then you have the Federation flagship. The Federation flagship. So these people are literally the best of the best on the Enterprise D.
Right.
And, like, even just to get into Starfleet, you should be the best of the best. And then to be on a top echelon above that. Is pretty cool.
I think we take it for granted that the Enterprise is the absolute cream of the crop of Starfleet, or at least it should be.
This could be my favorite kind of flashback or mental recession in Star Trek, because the use of a slow motion bird, I'm a sucker for that in any kind of cinema or TV or anything like that. You give me a John Woo film where a dove flies by in slow motion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it at the time when this aired, it was like, what, 1998? And Madonna's Frozen album, or no, Ray of Light album, had just come out, and she did the video for her single Frozen, and she did the same thing. And I thought, if only it were a little more blue, it would be the same exact thing. So
awesome.
It kind of gives me flashbacks to that whole thing. I don't know if that's ever going to go away.
I've never thought of that before, but that's, all of a sudden I just see like Madonna dancing in the background on the Borg ship.
She's got the long black wig. Yeah. Think Morticia Addams meets Borg Queen. And that would be a toned down version of
Madonna.
That'd
be amazing.
Like, if they would have added a little more green instead of blue to that video, I think it would have translated more. I don't know. I'm totally rambling now.
How many flash, like, we get a lot of Borg flashbacks. We get a lot of Borg memories of, and it's not just from Jean-Luc or Seven of Nine. We get a lot of well, this happened one time, and then we hear the, and then slow motion Borgs. Just
right?
So for some reason, like, Borgs in slow motion must terrify the masses.
Oh, totally. Yeah, this is, I think, a component of what they just do. I mean, I think they instill, once you break off the collect from the collective, it's just automatic Borg PTSD. I'm not kidding. Because everybody seems to have those flashbacks.
I really wish we could have had an on-screen mixing of Jean-Luc and Seven of Nine.
How do you suppose that would have happened?
I don't know. I know that we kind of briefly talked about it in a novel in the Homecoming series where they get home, because that's the only way that it would have worked. But maybe there could have been a Pathfinder way, like where Seven of Nine is having a really hard time. Like something happened recently and she can't get through it. And they're like, well, you need to talk to someone who's been through this. And she's like, well, who on earth who in the galaxy could I talk to like that? And then all of a sudden we see Patrick Stewart on the big screen and they have a conversation.
Wow, that would have been pretty epic. Well, it wasn't a rumor. It almost actually did happen. They almost gave Seven of Nine a cameo in Star Trek Nemesis.
Really?
So there might have been on-screen crossover that way, but I think for whatever reason, Jeri Ryan turned it down. I think just because it was a token, oh, here I am kind of a part. She saw that and said, that's okay.
That's too bad. That would have been fun. I mean, I mean, I guess if they wasted it, that would have been disappointing, but...
Yeah, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't have wanted to have had her appear just for the sake of making an appearance. I'm glad they put in Admiral Janeway. That was good enough. It served enough of a purpose to make it work. Yeah. But, I can see why it didn't happen.
I even would have been satisfied, like, if they had the conversation that I talked about where Janeway and Seven are talking, and she's like, well, you know, what am I going to do? And she's like, well, I think I found someone you can talk to. The doors open up, and we see Patrick Stewart's face, you know, on the screen, and he's waiting to talk to her. And then Janeway leaves, and Seven of Nine walks in by herself, and then the door is shut, end of scene. And so we know that they have a personal, intimate conversation about what they're going through, but we don't have the privilege of listening to it.
Much to our disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the fanboys would have just screamed at the same time, no, you did not cut right there. How dare you?
it's too intimate. We're not allowed to listen to it.
Right, which would be the beauty of it and the frustration at the same time. Now, that really would have been kind of cool just because Jean-Luc Picard is one of the very few people in the Alpha Quadrant who actually can relate to what Seven of Nine has been going through this whole time. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a sense,
yeah. So we have Seven and Janeway and the Doc alone in sickbay. Nobody knew that this was going to be the beginning of a new era of Star Trek Voyager where it was just going to be these three for most of the time left of Voyager.
Yeah, you're kind of setting the stage for that. Actually, kind of with this episode in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I guess buckle up. Here we go. You know, now that I know about all the turmoil happening behind the scenes with Mulgrew and Jeri Ryan, whenever I see those two talking in these early days of Seven of Nine, I think about it. And
I know, it pains me. I wish I never knew it.
I wish I never knew that. Yeah, me too. I wish in a way I never would have known, and yet it's too late, and it's too bad.
Yeah.
Now, okay, here's our aliens of the week, and they have an interesting look to them. They kind of look like they have football helmets on, only like the whole
like
metal...
a wire mesh of a football helmet.
Right, only it's over their eyes, not over their mouths.
I always kind of enjoyed this look, because I thought it was unique and distinctive, but yet not... like, in the way. Like, not obviously, well, like, how could this person function? Because there's been so many times we've seen, like, a headdress or a makeup job where you're like, there's just no way that this race would have evolved this way, or why would they wear this when they couldn't see? You know, stuff like that. This made a little sense that it was decorative and, you know, showed that, like, maybe a distinction in rank depending on color and placement, but it didn't get in the way of their vision.
True. And I figure the whole wire mesh in front of their faces serves a purpose to protect their noses.
Because maybe they have really weak noses.
Well, they've got like these super Bajoran ridges going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I forgot about this scene. So Seven's in the mess hall with Neelix, mm-hmm. and she's presenting him with a list of nutrients. And this is when Neelix teaches her how to eat.
Yes, yes,
that is such a cool thing. Like, this is such a cool concept.
It is. I love this scene. This is probably my favorite scene in the whole episode, just because I'm so glad they thought about this.
Yeah.
We take it for granted. But, of course, Seven of Nine is not going to know how to eat. She hasn't had to since she was 6 years old.
Yeah, I love how, like, she does all the things that a person, like, you just believe Jeri Ryan never has eaten before because, like, the way that she holds her fork and the way that she swallows way too hard, you know?
Right. Like, it's a miracle she even figures out how to do it, because how do you explain that to somebody? And I feel like the communication between Jeri Ryan and Ethan Phillips in this scene is fantastic. The body language Ethan Phillips uses to say, okay, this is kind of how you do it. I feel like that could not have been done better.
He uses that walk for everything.
He does. Like, he stir-fries everything.
Like, everything is stir-fried in the mess hall.
Apparently.
You want eggs? I'll throw it in the wok. You want a steak? I'll throw it in the wok. You want some pizza? I'll throw it in the wok.
Stir-fried pizza. I bet Tom Paris gets that at least once a week.
I'd hope so. And I'm glad we had that conversation, because, Tom actually pleaded with Neelix one time. He's like, please, just give me the ingredients. He's like, think about what I have to give you just to make one of those things. And nobody knows what they're talking about yet. He's like, bread, cheese, tomatoes, and just, like, all of that just for one dish or something. I can't remember, like, how, like, Neelix was pissed about it. But he's like, come on, it's just a pizza. Just make it once.
Well, and here's the thing. With a pizza, you can make a big pizza and then serve more than one person.
That's right. That's right.
So he's going to have to share.
He's going to have to share, yeah. And, like, Neelix, he even put down, like, a little bit of flowers in a vase for Seven for her first culinary experience. This is why Neelix is amazing, folks.
Yes, he is being very considerate here and thoughtful. It's very nice. Now, what do you suppose this is that she's eating? I can't figure this out.
Is mango eggs a thing? Because that's what it looks like.
Maybe. That's very possible, knowing Neelix. He probably put the two together. And maybe it does taste good stir-fried. Who knows?
So are we supposed to believe that this is her first time sitting as well?
Because
we've seen her lay down.
Well,
like on the...
I buy it. I mean, she regenerates in her alcove and she's standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Borg do not sit. Her poor feet.
And she wears heels all the time,
too. Yeah. Mine ache just thinking about it.
Like, I know it's for television and so that she can make her look taller and so she can be sexier with heels, but think about how a Borg would view heels.
Yeah, completely irrelevant, right? They're very inefficient.
Like,
hello.
Yeah. Like, for someone who stands on their feet all day long and sleeps in their feet, on their feet, you'd be wearing nurse's shoes. That's
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's the worst possible thing you could put on your feet 24 hours a day. But I suppose makeup is just isn't inefficient. Hairstyles are inefficient, and
that's true.
Well,
that's true. You're absolutely right. We start tugging on that thread, the whole thing is going to unravel.
Yeah, and so okay, Hollywood wins on a couple of accounts, I guess.
I love this because she looks so confused. She's like, this is
what
a weird
just happened.
Yeah. I still kind of have that sensation every once in a while. Like, if it's really hot outside and I get a cold beverage, I can feel it hit the bottom of my stomach, or vice versa. Like, if I'm really cold and I drink some coffee, I can just feel it hit the bottom of my stomach.
Uh-huh.
Oh, CGI Borg spiral. I need to know the name of those things. Did we just call them implants?
Yeah. I think so.
All right, so like one just bursted out of her hand, and now she's throwing Neelix on the floor like so many other crew members wanted to do.
Yeah, thanks for lunch.
Thanks for teaching me how to eat, jerk.
Yeah. Some gratitude. Now, I have to wonder, in all the times that we didn't see negotiations with alien species on Voyager, how many times did they have to have this argument with aliens who didn't want Voyager passing through their territory, but they were negotiating. I'm guessing it's in the hundreds.
You know, it always... This is one of those things where if we pull in the thread, the whole thing's going to unravel.
I guess that's the theme of our discussion this week.
Tapestry. Oh, no, that's something else.
Yes.
So, like, in space, you can move in three dimensions. Now, with the world, we have a relatively flat surface that we get to call Illinois or California or the United States or Brazil or Europe, you know, whatever. We it's a relatively flat surface, and so that's how we break it up, because we live on a two-dimensional plane. Now, if we lived in a three-dimensional realm, you know what I mean.
Speaking of unraveling.
You know what I mean.
Yeah, I do. If you're driving by car.
If you're in space and you can move in three dimensions, up and down, left and right, blah, 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 how do you define what your space is? I know here we have airspace, but in space, like, so do you live in a bubble? Like, is it a metaphorical bubble that you have to go around? Like, do you live in a sphere? Like, is that how we determine, like, Federation space and Cardassian space? Because if they had to go through this ridiculous route through this alien space, they always say, well, we'll have to go around them. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go above them. You know, like, how far above is it? How far below? You know, it's just that kind of thing. These are the questions that plague me and keep me up at night.
You must not get much sleep, because Star Trek does this all the time. They selectively forget that you can go around rather than through somebody's space. Because sometimes they'll say, well, if we go completely around it, that's going to add X amount of time to our journey. Right. And that's just not feasible. And we can't do it.
Right.
But a lot of times it's completely linear where, no, we're just going to go straight through because this is where we're at and you're going to like it.
Yeah. And it's the whole thing, like, in Undiscovered Country, like, whenever there's a shockwave, it's always on a single plane.
Yeah.
And they're like, turn it into the wave. I was like, oh, sir, why don't we just go above it? Like, just
no,
move up a little bit. No, turn her into the wave, damn it.
Yeah, I stole the words right out of my mouth. We need action on this ship. Let's rattle it up. Wake the people in their bunk beds. Let's go.
So Seven just guns down everybody with just a completely sociopathic look on her face.
Yeah. The first time I saw this episode, I really kind of wondered where it was going. Like, if she was going to become evil killer 7 of 9. Mm-hmm. She's just going to rampage on the ship. Because I didn't entirely know what was going on just yet. With the whole Borg thing and the flashbacks, I thought maybe somebody was inhabiting her mind. Yeah. You don't really know with Seven at this point, because this is very early on.
Yeah, we have no idea what her capabilities are. Like, and it's kind of like with Data, where they would just give Data new power whenever they needed to move the plot along.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm not saying it was this bad with Seven. It's just we didn't know what to expect, like you said.
Right, yeah. We don't know a whole lot at this point. And it's very early on to where, you know what? Yeah, she could defect. Oh, mm-hmm. And she just broke the shuttle bay door. That's gonna cost.
Blew a hole through the door. I don't think we've ever seen that before.
I don't think so. Not that I can recall.
Like, not until Nemesis, where we see it again.
Right. Yeah. And of course, these aliens are not very happy about 7 of 9 taking a shuttle into their territory. Leaving Janeway in quite the conundrum here.
What was I going to say? It's gone now.
Oh,
I was talking about the whole three-dimensional space thing. Like, that's one thing that I really liked about Abrams' Trek, is that in the first one, they established right away that they can move in three dimensions and that not everybody exists on the same plane. So, like, when they drop out of warp, from the camera's perspective, the Scimitar. I can't remember what it was called, but like the evil guy's ship.
Oh, Nero's ship, the Narada.
The Narada, thank you. The Narada was at a funny angle, or like was at a regular angle in reference to the planet, but then we see the Enterprise and it's upside down and to the left a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And so, because like in Next Generation and Voyager, all these ships always meet each other nose to nose at the same level.
Right.
And so it took the Enterprise a second to adjust itself to the Narada, and I just thought that was so cool.
It was a pretty cool effect. I like that too. You know, I kind of think these aliens might have stolen some clothing design ideas from Jake Sisko. What do you think?
I think so. I mean, like, they said, you know what? We really like his vest. Let's make an entire fashion line of jackets out of him.
The Jake Sisko line.
Oh, this is the moment where Janeway doesn't like bullies.
Yes, she reprises that line. I like it. Because this might have been the last time she says such a thing. And the first time, of course, was season one.
Well, she doesn't say the word bullies, but she just doesn't put up with him.
Well,
she kicks him out, yeah.
Yes. Now, if I'm recalling correctly, the next episode after this one was Scientific Method. And I want to envision that those aliens are aboard this ship now, too, conducting experiments. Because Janeway looks a little tired.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking they're starting the experiment. She's got a headache. And boy, is she just really not in the mood for any of this.
Now, we just saw an older person on Voyager. Now, I was just thinking about that. Like as we were tilting down and with the camera, we started seeing very young and virile extras, as we always do on Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, I was like, you know what? Like, I liked how in TNG they showed older people, like not just middle-aged, but older, like in their 60s and 70s and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then right when I was thinking that, we saw an older black gentleman with gray hair in a blue uniform. And I was like, yeah, way to go, Voyager, because the thing is with Starfleet and like people live longer and people are healthier in older age. And so, and also like rank isn't everything to everyone.
Yeah.
So you don't have to be a middle age or older. Like we normally only see them as admirals and captains, but what if you just love the science of it? You know, like what if you just want to be out on the frontier?
Right. Or what if you're like Miles O'Brien, where you're kind of like in an enlisted manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're just like, I want to go do this. I want to be out and I don't want to go through 4 years of school to do it. You know, like, and,
right.
You know, and you could be, and the beauty of a society with no money is that you can change careers without worrying about making money.
Yeah. And it's true. With longer lifespan, you could have several careers if you wanted to and be
mm-hmm.
perfectly fulfilled.
I think I read somewhere, and I can't remember this, where I read it, but also like somebody did the math on Picard on when he was born and when he was commanding the Enterprise, is that he was actually 10 years older than Patrick Stewart. Like Picard is 10 years older than Patrick Stewart.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
It was either 10 years or more. And,
wow.
And so their rationale is that, you know, in the future is that with people living longer and with the health that it is, like the medicine that it is that people can be 100 years old and still work in Starfleet and be fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably relatively, because I'm thinking of Bones in Encounter at Farpoint. He was 100 how many years old? And he was looking a little
It was something ridiculous. I can't remember exactly how old he was, but he was over 100. But I remember reading a DS9 novel the other day, and I can't remember which one it was. It was more than the other day. And the new XO of Deep Space Nine was 100 years old, and he looked like he was 60.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, maybe there's this cutoff point.
Well, maybe they just raised the retirement age instead of 65, or it's probably going to be 75 by the time we get there, if we're lucky. Maybe it's more like 125 or 135. I don't know. Or however long you want to go, as long as you're healthy. I mean, there's people today who work until the day that they die.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say that you can not work until you're 150 if you want to?
Exactly. It's Star Trek. Anything is possible. It's including the doc just giving Janeway a hypospray saying that they can neutralize nanoprobes. Now, if we knew how to do that...
this contradicts so many things, and I don't know if we have enough time to dissect something that big.
Yeah.
Oh.
At least they said it was, like, temporary. Like, it was a temporary neutralization. At least it wasn't, like...
Yeah, but it's done. Still, that just screams plot device, does it not?
It really does, and there was one thing in... We had one Borg episode in Enterprise, which was actually pretty good.
Yeah, believe it or not, I like that one.
And the doc got infected with nanoprobes. But the thing is that they weren't fully developed. Like, it was the Borg were, like, they didn't have all the technology at their fingertips in order to change everything. So they were, like, proto-Borg or something like that.
Yeah.
And so they kept trying to, I don't know. It was something weird to the fact where you would believe that the Doc in Enterprise Phlox had some time before he became a Borg, and that he was able to fight them off using radiation, because they had that instilled at the beginning where they're like, the shuttle totally just changed. I'm sorry, I know we don't want to talk about visual things.
No, but it just did.
The type of shuttle, like, before the commercial, the shuttle had, the nacelles were extended from the body. But in this shot from the commercial, they're now attached to the body.
Yeah, like, okay, this is like what, a type 9 shuttlecraft, type 4? God, I don't know my terminology. I'm not really much of a nerd in terms of the tech specs.
You'd have to talk to Drew Stewart. He's really good at remembering shuttlecrafts. I'm good at remembering ships, but not shuttlecrafts.
Yeah, or maybe Daniel Prue, because of the nacelle thing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's our nacelle guy. He would know all about it. But anyway, yeah, it totally did change. I've never noticed that before.
Noticed that either. Now, this one, I know this one. That one, like the one that Paris and Tuvok are in behind Seven, that's a Type 2 shuttle.
Okay. Okay.
Because it's super small. That's the only reason I remember that, is because I think they did this forced exposition with B'Elanna one time, where she goes, like, oh, I feel like I'm getting a case of Type 2 fever or something like that. And then, like, somebody goes, Type 2 fever, what's that? Well, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah. Nice. You know, we don't get much interaction throughout the whole show between these two characters.
I feel like it's all or nothing with them. Like, it's either they don't talk to each other for an entire season, but then when they do, we get an entire episode of just the two of them.
Yeah, you're right. It's interesting. It's like they only talk to each other when they have to, but then when they do, it's totally cool.
And then Seven of Nine just did the Vulcan nerve pinch on a Vulcan. How embarrassing.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And I love the way that Tuvok collapsed, and you know it's a Vulcan nerve pinch.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Now, was it ever established that shuttlecrafts have rear phasers? Oh, and the shuttlecraft's back to the different type again.
I am so confused about this now. Could you guys please make up your minds? That's probably something they'll have to fix with the Blu-rays. Take note, Okudas.
See, no, that I always wonder about that, and we've had this discussion before. Like, when they do the Blu-rays, are they going to redo the special effects, or are they just going to update them, as in take the textures, take the original files, and then say, HD, where's the HD button, you know?
Yeah.
Or what, you know, what are they going to revamp everything? I don't know.
They have said that doing the CGI elements of Voyager is going to be tougher than working with the models that, say, TNG and DS9 had for the majority of their run. So it's a very good question. And until they give the green light on the Voyager Blu-rays, I guess we're just not going to know.
Yeah. I feel like how they tackled Deep Space Nine, if they tackled Deep Space Nine, will show us how they'll tackle Voyager because of the later CGI in the seasons.
That's true. They're going to have to handle that toward the end of DS9. And so by the time they get to Voyager, then maybe they'll have this figured out as to how they want to go about it. I think it is inevitable that we're going to get them. It's just a matter of when, and I'm hoping the sooner the better, because the last TNG season is coming out in December.
Yep. My family, especially my wife, is freaking out because they're like, what are we going to get you for Christmas and your birthday from now on? I was like, Deep Space Nine, hopefully.
Yeah, seriously. But the thing is they're not working on it yet, and so it's going to take some time for them to produce this, get it out, and then start rolling through the seasons. And
do we know for a fact that they're not working on it?
Well, I suppose we... not necessarily, but...
Like, could they be saving... Could they be working on it secretly and then say, like, oh, and we're going to release season 1? Like, so when they announce it, it's actually on its way to being made, that kind of thing.
You know, if they are working on it and they're keeping it under wraps, they're doing a damn good job. Because I'm not hearing a peep. How about you?
No, I haven't heard anything. But the thing is, I was the same way with with TNG, like, because I researched it probably, I researched it like every 4 months. I tried to figure out if they were doing TNG on Blu-ray, and everyone said no. Everyone said no. Everyone said it was impossible. Everyone said it wasn't going to happen because it was too difficult. And then, bam, they made the announcement and already had a trailer. And it's, that next level, like TNG, the next level Blu-ray that they came out with, you know? Mm-hmm. And so maybe they would do that with Deep Space Nine.
You know what would be awesome is if in the Season 7 TNG Blu-ray, they Easter egg a preview for DS9 on Blu-ray. Would we not scream?
I was a fool when I bought the TOS on Blu-ray, and mm-hmm. then it said that it had the Deep Space Nine triple episode on there. I was like, oh, holy crap. They must have just redone that one episode for the TOS Blu-ray release. Uh-huh. How I felt like such a fool. Like I was so blinded by by hoping and anticipation and naivety that I popped it in and I was like, ah, crap, it's just SD.
Darn it. Oh, they gotcha.
Yeah. So that's kind of creepy that she's
the chamber.
Yeah, Janeway is standing in the...
Yeah.
In the alcove.
That works, Janeway. I don't think you can regenerate.
Think about it from like a human perspective, though. Like, if like Chakotay was missing and then Janeway just laid in his bed, like, where are you, Chakotay?
Maybe she does.
Maybe she
in
does.
In fanfic,
when he goes missing,
she does.
Because he goes missing a lot.
Well, he's too busy wrecking shuttles. I mean, we know that happens. But yeah, okay, that was interesting. I mean, this is the. I don't know. I definitely feel like in this episode, Janeway has taken Seven on as her personal pet project.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's even a line, I think it's in the Turbolift when she's talking with Chakotay, where something like, you know, we'll get her back or we'll save her or I'll get her back, something like that. Like, she's taking very personal responsibility. It's not we, it's I.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, Janeway, you're the captain of the ship. Do you not have enough to do?
Yeah.
But again, this is kind of like the whole Janeway mommy kind of thing where she has her projects. Tom Paris was kind of a project for a while, and now it's Seven of Nine. But she takes Seven of Nine very personally, and sometimes I wonder why she takes it as far as she does.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like she might be a representation of the rest of the crew. Where, you know, where she's always talking about how she has to get the crew home and she has to take care of the crew. And this is a different kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And maybe Seven of Nine is just a personification of that.
Maybe so.
Spitballing here.
Hey, it's all speculative, right? We don't really know what's going on in Catherine Janeway's mind. And I said it last week, but anytime somebody says a raven in this episode, I automatically think of the poem by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
Just because I had to memorize it in high school and recite it.
I always think of James Earl Jones reading it like he did on The Simpsons.
Nice. Now that is going to get stuck in my head.
Rapping
and
on
that's
the door,
okay.
On the door. Yeah. And back to the old types shuttle.
Mm-hmm. This was pretty visual. I like the coloring, the color palette they put for these planets.
I love how her shoes look like they seamlessly blend into her outfit.
Yes, I do believe that's the idea.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know why, but I do. like it's a boot that never stops. Like, it just turns into your pants.
I think that's Starfleet style. Because, like, with a Starfleet uniform, granted, of course, the boots are separate from the pants, but you kind of make it want it to have one seamless look.
Yeah.
One line.
Yeah. Like, even in TNG season 1 and 2, like, they even though they were separate, like, they had, like, little stirrups on the bottom of the shoes to make it look like it was one seamless thing.
Well, and from what I have seen of costumes, that is still what they're doing in the Voyager era. They've got stirrups.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah, to give that really straight look to the pants. They're wearing stirrups underneath on their feet with the boots and all that.
Well, at least it wasn't like in TNG where it was one bodysuit with the stirrups, because we all know that story about how Patrick Stewart was just hunched over for the entire day and had to tell them to stop, demand that they stop with these ridiculous costumes.
They did not look comfortable at all, that is for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, the Voyager ones are, they do have a waist, like there is some separation, so like it's pulling at the waist instead of up top.
Well, and you do know the whole behind the scenes reason why they ended up doing that, right?
Well, remind me and the listeners.
Okay, well, season 3 TNG rolled along, and by that point, many of these not so struggling actors anymore were eating a little better. Let's put it that way. And because those early uniforms were so incredibly tight, they decided to loosen them up just a little bit to give the actors a tiny bit of leeway, because they weren't quite as straight and narrow, let's put it that way, as they were in season 1.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the reason why the Voyager uniforms came about. With season 3 and TNG, that might have been a side reason, but the real main reason was because Patrick Stewart went to the producers and demanded that they change the outfits, because his doctor told him that you cannot continue working 12 hours a day in this uniform because it'll ruin your back.
Okay, well, then there's that too.
But I didn't know about that one. I knew that was always a reason later on. Like, we've seen that with Shatner, with the green uniform.
When he got just a tiny little bit of a gut.
Yeah, and we saw that with Sisko as in the later seasons, where, they were thankful that the first contact uniforms came about.
Because even those were even a little more forgiving, if you will. Yeah, well, and I mean, who can blame him? I mean, first off, aging. You're going to put on a little bit of weight.
Oh, I don't blame them whatsoever. Whatsoever. Yeah. That's just how it is.
And I mean, there is a difference between scrambling for work all the time and you don't know if you're going to get dinner that night or what you're going to get for dinner, to having a very stable income and having, meals catered to you on set all the time. You've got constant access to food, and it's only natural you're going to, eat a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the recession that she...
Yes, where she's hiding under the table right here. Very convincing.
She screams Papa. That gets to me every single time she does that.
Yes, the way she says that. I mean, she is a 6-year-old girl here. Jeri Ryan, man. Jeri Ryan. It's such a good thing that she was such a good actress.
Yeah.
She made Seven of Nine such a good character. Otherwise, I would have absolutely hated her. Because if she would have been Bimbo of Borg... so many angry fans. I mean, I know there's people who don't like Seven of Nine just because of the costume and don't give her any credit for being a good character even now, still to this day. Yeah. But the fact that they really did work on her and give her a good characterization, I feel like that really saved her.
That's a stupid reason not to like a character because of the costume.
Well, it's a very narrow-minded and superficial reason. Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Better put. I remember we got some criticisms when we did our analysis of the Seven of Nine character. We had some criticisms because they said that we talked about her costume too much. And I was like, how can you not talk about her costume when dealing with this character? Because so much of the world had a problem with it.
Well, that's just it. I mean, it is a part of... the whole thing, right? How can you not talk about it? But no, it's not the only thing.
We barely focused on it when we talked about it. It was so stupid.
Well, we didn't dwell on for 45 minutes because I know there are people out there who easily could, but we didn't just stop there. So yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Take a chill pill. It's cool. We are right.
I always wonder how the Borg treat children when they take them to the maturation chamber. You know, like, like, do they carry him? Do they swaddle him? Do they grab him by the foot and just, like, drag him? You know, like, what do they give him a sweetie, like a candy, and say, like, it's going to be okay, and then shove him into the maturation chamber?
Get him into the Borg van.
Yeah. They lure them into their alcove with funny stories and candy.
It's true. We've never seen that. Who knows? Do they make them watch, like, really cutesy cartoons for a little while, lull them into a false sense of security?
Oh. I love that hero shot of whenever we see, like, a Starfleet ship just kind of, like come into frame, and it's much bigger than the ships that are in focus in the frame. It always, that's I love that shot in Star Trek.
Yeah. Very good stuff. This had to have been so traumatic for Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
In a way, I kind of wish there was more repercussion, just because this would take so much, I think, for anybody to process, much less somebody who has, the last few weeks?
Yeah.
Kind of muddled through, okay, I am a human now. I need to be a human, not a Borg. And now you're in the place where it all began, essentially.
Yeah.
And
this is a big ship.
It is a big ship. Yes.
Like, from the outside, it just looked like the size of a runabout, but inside it is much larger.
It's deceptively roomy, apparently, for the science vessel.
There's so many things that just bug me about that timeline. And I know we've talked about it before, about when Seven was a child and when we were introduced to the Borg.
Uh-huh.
And the style of ship that they used. And it just, the dates don't match up for how old Jerry Ryan is or how old Seven of Nine is. Like, if they said, like, okay, well, she was in a maturation chamber, so, like, adult Seven of Nine is really only 13. Like, you know, then I would believe it, but they didn't do that. And so... Yeah,
no, they never really figured that out, and they certainly muddled it. They obviously, in the writer's room, didn't take, like, clear off the whiteboard and say, okay, we need to map this out.
Yeah.
I love this special effect where the ship is falling off of the cliff. It looks like this giant caterpillar slowly falling apart piece by piece.
Yeah, and we see that it has three decks on that ship. I mean, just for two people to run with one child, that's a big ship.
It does seem kind of big. I don't know. Maybe it's just a perspective thing. This is basically an overgrown runabout or a shuttlecraft, said. Two people, three decks. I mean, when you, like, I don't know, if you translate that to the equivalent of a house, how big do you suppose that is? Like, what, 3,000 square feet?
Oh, I'm guessing more. I'm guessing,
like,
more
way
than
more
that.
Than two, three, like, three people need. Two people with a child.
And so we're back into the Da Vinci simulation. We're ending where we're beginning, and Seven of Nine is just staring at the at
we're
going to
bookend
inventions.
This thing. Yes.
Oh, listen to this. He adjusted one of the... Janeway just said that the doctor adjusted one of her implants so that she won't be receiving any more homing signals. Yeah, because we never see that happen again in Voyager.
Right? Yeah. Well... I suppose the idea was that it wouldn't happen again, but, you know, Borg technology, it adapts, and so I guess they find a way.
Life finds a way.
Yes. Now, this is an interesting idea where Janeway mentions to Seven, you ought to spend some time in the holodeck and create a program. You can enjoy yourself. And, well, when she finally does that, it's a hologram of Chakotay.
Well, who
this is
wouldn't
bad
honestly
advice.
Yeah, it's kind of like I love that, like, Janeway, who's secretly in love with Chakotay, tells Seven to have some fun in the holodeck, and so she chooses a holodeck with Chakotay in it. And that's kind of like, friends, that reminds me of when Paul McCartney told Michael Jackson, he gave him some advice. He's like what you really need to do is just buy some of the original tapes of songs, and then that way you own the royalties.
Uh-huh.
And Paul McCartney was talking about buying your own tapes, and Michael Jackson's like, you know what, that is a great idea. And so he bought the Beatles tapes.
Yeah. Booyah.
That is essentially what Seven just did to Janeway. She bought her tapes.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. And that is the episode. That's the Raven. Very cool.
You're right. Next up is Scientific Method. And the thumbnail that we're seeing on Netflix is the doctor giving Janeway a massage, and she does not look happy about
it. Oh, she looks so pained. Poor Janeway. All right. Well, the Raven isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because we're basically pitching a story arc.
Right.
Like we're Babylon 5, and we've got this five-year arc.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a three-year plus maybe the cartoons plus the movies arc.
Earl Grey.
Billy has 25 self-stealing symbols, and he needs to trade with a non-Federation species using a different currency. What does Billy do?
The Orb.
They've already been kind of to that next step. I mean, he massages her all the time and helps her out of the tub. Again.
He knows that she has rashes on her thighs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so...
To the journey! You know, talk about a heavy-handed message.
Like, literally, on your back!
Like, literally, on your back. Like, I want you to feel the weight. You know, like, this, like, this is the kind of non-subtlety that makes it fun. Warp 5.
The fact of the matter is, Bakula is playing this character just as he should. It's true that Archer seems a bit uneasy, lacking in confidence. But he's the first human captain to see these strange new worlds.
The Ready Room.
I haven't gotten to the point in my research where I'm that caught up. I mean, I'm very much stuck right in season one of Next Gen and kind of have blinders on everything else right now. Yeah, boy, tell me about it.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And we have kind of reached a milestone here, a little earlier than you might think we would have reached that milestone. This is the final episode of Star Trek for which we have a writing credit given to Gene Roddenberry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And he wanted it, the first part to be called Becoming Houdini, and the second part to be called Being Houdini.
Should have been called Houdini Begins.
Yes.
And Houdini Rises.
Yes.
Melodic Treks.
At only 22 years of age, he conducted the Munich Symphony Orchestra using 110 pieces, a 60-piece choir, and a 30-piece children's choir. Sometimes you need the children to get them high notes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have so many freaking podcasts anymore, I can't keep track. With the addition of Axanar and Mission Log, now we've got the 602 Club, which is hosted by Matt Rushing, and that is a kind of general geekery talk podcast. It's going to cover geeky things outside of Star Trek. And so if you haven't listened to that, give that a listen. It's a lot of fun. And none of these podcasts would be possible without the help of our sponsors, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
And not only do we have sponsors helping us, but we have individuals helping us through Patreon. And so let's mention a little bit about that, because this is kind of a cool idea where it's not quite a Kickstarter, but it's more of a monthly, subscription, I suppose, where every month you can donate a certain amount of money, however much or however little as you like, to a project that you enjoy and want to keep going. And we have a Patreon account going at Trek FM, and you go to patreon.com/trekfm to go there and do that, and you can check out what kind of perks are in it for you, for whatever level of contribution you can choose to make every month. And that helps us out tons. And we appreciate all of your support for those of you who are doing it.
And something else that you can do to help us out is to go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go wherever, and write us a 5-star review, and we'll mention you on the podcast.
Yes, and speaking of which, we do have a couple of people that we need to thank. So let's do that. How about a shout out to BW2082 and CrystalWhirl18 for leaving us 5 stars in the US iTunes store and giving us some love by writing us a review and singing our praises. And I feel the love, don't you? I always do.
I feel it. Tell your friends.
So if you want to feel the love, you know what to do. And that helps us, that helps other listeners find us too, because of the way the iTunes ranking things work that we just don't understand. But it helps us out. We'll say that much. All right. Well, I believe that is another show. And so let's talk about what we're doing next time.
I'm really excited about this because this allows us to go outside of the Voyager realm and into other parts of Star Trek, where we find an episode that sounds pretty similar to a Voyager episode, whether it's the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, or Enterprise. We find an episode where the plot is a little similar to a Voyager episode, and we compare and contrast them. So you'll have to tune in next week to hear it. But until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!